Has the vegan bubble burst?
Who is Rick Behrman?
And what's the sales of video games in the 1980s got to do with anything?
Anyway, that is enough of the falafel. I'm Anthony.
And I'm Julie.
And I'm Kate. And this is episode 53 of Vegan Week. Welcome, everybody, to what is a slightly unusual, but of course, very special episode of Vegan Week. It's great to have you here.
Indeed, yeah. We normally cover a dozen or so of the week's news stories, but we thought this week what we would do is we would pick one story, or rather one theme, that has been coming up in the news, I'm going to say, for at least the last 6 months of researching our Vegan Week shows, and we're going to deep dive into that in detail. Now, I don't know what proportion of our listenership get your vegan news exclusively from us and are now panicking, thinking, yes, but I want to know what's happened in the last 7 days. Don't worry. Next week's show with myself and Carlos, we're going to cover the previous 2 weeks worth of news. So the stuff that's happened in the last 7 days, you will get that. You'll get that next week, as well as next week's news. Woo, what will it be? But today we are just focusing on one issue, and I've just realized, Julie, that you were going to say all of that.
Yes, that's fine. That's totally fine.
So the story that we want to look at, or rather the concept that's been kind of provoked by an Earthling Ed video that popped up on my YouTube feed a few days ago, was this concept of the vegan bubble being burst. Now, if you are an avid listener of Vegan Week shows, you will know that we've been covering this in several different forms and guises over the last few months, because particularly tabloid newspapers, but also certain meat and dairy industry ads have kind of hinted at this too. There's been a lot of stuff saying the vegan bubble has burst. So we've had, for example, Oatly have withdrawn some of their ice cream ranges. Innocent Drinks did some plant milk for a while and they've withdrawn that. We had Hex sausages, vegan sausages, were withdrawn. And unfortunately, we have seen certain vegan companies actually close, small independent businesses that were vegan closing in the last 6 to 12 months. And companies like Beyond, do the Beyond Burgers, Beyond Sausages, all of that stuff, their shares have plummeted. When I say plummeted, I think that might be a slight exaggeration. They've dropped noticeably, and that made the headline too. And it seems like each time this happens, news agencies are reporting it that, oh, this is a sign, further evidence that the vegan bubble has burst. Kate, Julie, what reaction happens inside you when we see those headlines? Because we've seen it quite a lot recently, and I don't know, it can get to you if you're not careful, can't it?
It's not getting to me in a bad way. I am seeing this as a positive in a way. Veganism and animal rights as a whole, because the two are interlinked, they were never a bubble in the first place. You cannot describe a justice movement that has existed not just for decades, but actually for hundreds of years as a bubble. Not accurately anyway, not with any sort of any kind of credibility. So it's a justice movement and it's an evolution. So there may be some consumer products that go along with that evolution and that growing awareness, and they will have life cycles as all products do, and some will be short and some will be longer, and some will have a bigger reach than others. And some who have had a shorter life cycle or a smaller reach have come to the attention of the media more so than other products that just come and go and nobody comments on it. So if you're looking for something specific and that's your filter and that's your focus, you will find it. If you're looking for evidence for something, when people try to belittle something and make it sound smaller than it actually is, that's usually a sign that they're afraid of how big it actually is. So I'm not at all surprised by this.
See, this is why we have you on the podcast, Julie, because that is very inspiring. And like, you've given me confidence there, and I'm really taking your words on board. But some of us, like me and Kate, are fragile, vulnerable people that worry that this is all going to implode and we're going to be left like the only people advocating for animals. And it's all going to be really short-lived, aren't we, Kate?
Yeah, we're desperately worried.
Does it not get you in the solar plexus and you're like, oh my God?
Well, I have to say it does. I mean, Julie, you're so level-headed. Yeah. I wish I was as cool, calm and collected as you were. Because initially, it makes me really angry. You know, and it really does. It's, you know, it's like they're belittling it as a trivial lifestyle choice, and they're kind of gaslighting.
Yeah, but they're doing it because they're worried. That's the sign of a worried industry.
This is true. I do come round to realising that, but initially I have to have my anger. Let me have my anger, Julie.
For it, yes. Why don't you turn your anger into a bit of happiness? That actually, I would love veganism to be a bubble.
Yeah, I know.
I would love veganism to be an outdated concept, and it will be one of these days, because nobody wants to be a vegan. What we want is for the world to recognise animal rights. And to oppose violence against animals, for that to be absolutely in the history books, and the only place that it is in the history books. Mm. Nobody needs to define themselves as vegan anymore, because it's just so the norm.
Totally, you know, totally live in agree peace with
the animals. So let's, you know, they can call it what they like. They can, you know, veganism, maybe that will go out of fashion. I'd love it to go out of fashion.
Well,
but respecting animals' rights, that's growing by the day. Every day there is a breakthrough.
It is. I think what kind of I'm a very insecure person, and my kind of like emotional response to things immediately, my reaction, if you like, will often be very catastrophic. And I guess my insecurity and where my catastrophic thoughts go. So if you think of things that, I don't know, 50 years ago, culturally, were more accepted and more normalised, things that now we kind of hark back to, I don't know, let's say children playing out on the streets or people being in touch with nature, things like that culturally now are less in fashion, and they might be seen as, oh, it's so wholesome. You go on walks with your family, or you do little crafts in your house. How wonderful, how twee. Like, that is not mainstream anymore, and it used to be, I'm led to believe. I don't know. I have not experienced these things when they were more popular, but that's what I'm led to believe. And I think that is where my catastrophic thoughts go, is that this whole concept of being compassionate and advocating for animals and believing in animal rights becomes something in 30 years' time that is very, very even more fringe than it is now. Like you say, Julie, I don't actually believe that that will happen, because I just think social justice and the kind of one of the pluses of the world being, there's more transparency in the world now, isn't there? It's harder for people to kind of hide things, cover things up. You know, everyone knows everything. There's a permanent record of everything, and that brings bad things. But in the case of social justice, I think it helps these things gain momentum. So rationally, I don't think that that's going to happen. But I do just worry that, oh my God, are we going to start going backwards? That's my initial response.
We can't go backwards, because evolution doesn't do that. And this is evolution. But also, can you imagine how people would laugh if people tried to frame something like anti-racism and call it a bubble and a bubble bursting and all? You know what I mean? Something as big as that. This is as big as that. It's the same size. It's the same gravity as that. So to reduce it to a bubble doesn't make any sense. And to measure a justice movement by a random collection of consumer products that have arisen, you know, in response to it, is just ludicrous anyway.
There was just something else that just made me really cross as well. It's the self-righteous smirking that goes on with some of these TV presenters. You know, so GB News, they compared veganism to an eating disorder. And that is just despicable on so many levels. You know, eating disorders are not to be trivialised.
Yeah.
You know, they're very real for people. They are, you know, and to say that is just, that makes me angry too, you know.
Well, to say that from the comfort of a studio, I mean, like, I'm not a violent person, but if he'd have said that in front of my face, my goodness, I'd be holding myself back.
Well, I heard that quote and I just felt slightly sorry for the person, the commentator. It says everything about him and nothing about veganism or animal rights, because he clearly just does not have an understanding. So I thought, gosh, how embarrassing for him to be, you know, on such a kind of wide-reaching platform and to be displaying such a level of ignorance, I suppose. But I just felt, you know, what a shame for him, really.
The trouble is, though, yeah, Julie, there are people sucking it up. That's the trouble. That is the worrying thing.
Yeah, well, they will have to discover that they are in the wrong. But also this thing about, you know, products that have come and gone, on the flip side of that, there are plenty of companies and products who are doing the opposite. They are reaching more customers, even though their product was never not vegan. They are rebranding it as a vegan product. We've all seen it, you know. They know it's a selling point now. So the opposite is happening, in that it is becoming a selling point for consumer goods.
There is a fish and chip shop a couple of miles away from me, and it is not vegan. However, in the very small amount of space that they have on their company's fascia board, the sort of bit of material above their glass, as well as the business's name, they have chosen to put vegan up there because they have a separate fryer that they do vegan products in. And I mean, the proportion of their business that is using that is going to be minimal. But like you say, Julie, it's a selling point. Think of all the other things that they could choose to put there to sell products.
You cannot judge the progress of a social justice movement by the, you know, the markets associated with certain niche products. You know, they're using the fake meat sales and, you know, companies appearing that produce that. I've been vegan for a long time. I haven't eaten animal meat for over 40 years. So you would imagine that in that time, you know, I've probably eaten a lot of fake meat. I haven't eaten any, to my knowledge. It was only very recently that I tried some corn, and clearly,
pushing about
clearly
out.
My system wasn't ready for that. So, you know, you cannot judge the extent of my veganism by my consumption of fake meat, or else I would have failed the test, you know? I'm not worried.
Should we have a quick look at some of the headlines that haven't gone quite as viral as heck sausages being discontinued in the last 12 months, but actually some news just to counterbalance things, some of the animal agriculture-based products, industries that actually have been having a difficult last 12 months themselves?
Yes. So we've got some examples here. The first one is from Pilgrim's, huge big food company, which has announced that it will close another UK factory, impacting 260 jobs. And their quote to the press was, "Despite our best efforts, we are continuing to face industry challenges and lower than expected market volumes." So this company have got 5,500 employees in the UK, but this recent news comes only a year after a whole 1,000 employees at another of their sites were threatened with fire and rehire tactics. I've also read elsewhere about them having to go to a 4-day week as well.
Yeah. If you just imagine a vegan company doing that, like that would be circulated everywhere, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So Nolichek Meats in Wisconsin, they're a 71-year-old company, and they are stopping operations in 2023, apparently.
Yeah, and another American company that you may have heard of called Tyson, massive company, probably one of the biggest animal product producers, processors in the US. They have announced that they are closing a pork plant in Iowa, laying off 1,200 workers. It's the ninth closure since early last year, as the Arkansas-based company deals with weaker demand for meat and poultry. And that is their words, weaker demand for meat and poultry.
We've also got Losco Chilled Foods, which has gone into administration, losing 120 people their job. They're also in trouble because they had labelled their food as British when it wasn't. It had come from other countries.
So Smithfield Foods, they're also a massive company, I believe, in North Carolina, is closing its pork processing plant with the loss of 107 jobs.
Indeed. And as we reported a couple of weeks ago on the show, Bernard Matthews recently confirmed the closure of their headquarters in Norfolk. They employed about 600 people there. They had losses of £10 million in 2023 and £25 million the year before. Like massive, massive numbers. I mean, maybe it's my social media filters, but like I'm not getting this news. It's only because I'm looking to research the show that I'm coming across this sort of news. And as we also heard, I think it was last week on the show, Farming UK have reported that pig herds, as well as other animals, have culled in smaller numbers, or rather the overall herd of pigs, as one example, has been decreasing in the last year. Kate, should we give a bit of background to this Earthling Ed video that's come out this week? I mean, I wondered about just saying at the top of the show, like, pause your podcast and just watch this video, because it's 18 minutes long. Yeah. And it's a good watch. Only two minutes of it is an ad for a vegan dog food company. The rest of it is really good content, isn't it?
They're a very good vegan dog food company, I have to say.
I've never tried it.
Have you not? Oh, it's delicious. Anyway, yeah, so yeah, I found this a very interesting video, and Ed takes a deep dive into the bubble bursting stuff, decline of plant-based meats. So as he says, it's kind of true on one level, and he reminds us that in 2018-19, there were loads of new products coming onto the market, and The Economist, I don't know if you remember, I do because I cheered, they dubbed 2019 the year of the vegan. But unfortunately, the poor old animal ag industries, they started getting their knickers in a twist and went to a delightful PR firm called the Centre for Consumer Freedom. This was founded and is run by somebody called Rick Berkman, aka Beelzebub, and it's all about protecting industry profits. So in the past, he's got a track record, has this man, because in the past he set up anonymous campaign front groups to promote, I mean, there's a great long list here, but things like the tobacco industry, Monsanto, alcohol, fossil fuel companies, also opposing Americans with Disabilities Act, all sorts of things.
Really nice guy.
Really lovely chap, you know, reduced rights for paid sick leave, and also attacking US animal welfare and animal rights groups. So his mission is to exploit fear, greed, and anger, spreading doubt and confusion so that the dear consumers have the freedom to resort to the status quo, business as usual, job done. Anyway, so basically they are waging war on veganism through advertising and misinformation and lies. And there's lots of examples of some of the campaigns they've run. But all more expensive products, apparently, including more expensive cuts of meat and plant-based meat products, have taken a hit with the recession. However, Ed talks about this very interesting concept. So I don't know who remembers and was around to remember the video game crash in 1983 to 1985, when there was market saturation of video games and consoles. And many companies went bankrupt, but they were deemed often the poor quality games that went out of business. But the media were touting this as evidence for the end of video games, which sounds ridiculous now.
Did a similar thing happen, that there was like the dot-com crash, wasn't there, where like the internet at the very end of the 90s, people were saying, oh, this is the end of the internet, like it's, you know, it's had its day, but now it's crashed. I think it's a similar thing, isn't it? People see it's a big deal, jump on the bandwagon without really researching it, and so it crashes.
Doom mongering, I guess. But so I mean, I've never heard of this before, but I'm sure you're right. And there must be lots of other examples, because it's now known that often new technologies, they'll go through what are deemed hype cycles. And after an initial burst, there is the trough of disillusionment, where poor quality stuff, often it goes out of business. And then comes the slope of enlightenment, which is when businesses or potential businesses, they achieve better understanding on how to achieve sustainable growth and better quality. And then comes the plateau of productivity, which is a time when risk innovation is lower and the technology becomes more widely accepted, and there is a sharp rise in adoption, which is what we're hoping for with the vegan movement, are we not?
Yeah.
And Ed is arguing that we are now currently in the trough of disillusionment, or as I like to call it, the bath of tears.
Oh.
So, but anyway, Waitrose say that their sales of vegan products have actually risen, that the vegan bubble hasn't burst, it's just maturing. And yeah, like you say, Julie, veganism is not determined by the plant-based meats or burgers market, is it? It's an ethical philosophy. It's not a fashion choice.
So do we think then that kind of reshoring ourselves with these kind of, I mean, they're sort of economic theories, economic terms, I suppose, that you've described there, Kate, that can apply to the status quo or the kind of journey that consumerist veganism is going through at the moment. Is that the way that we kind of need to reshore ourselves? Is that how we should respond to this? Or do we think there are different ways that, like, as individuals, we should or can respond when these stories come up? Like, do we need to just ignore them and just say, well, I'm not even crediting that with a response, that's a load of nonsense?
Well, what do we think? One thing I would say is, as vegans, we are used to being different from the mainstream and the majority anyway, so we're no stranger to that. It certainly wouldn't deter me, put me off in any way. I am not needing to be the same as other people. My conviction lives on regardless of what other people are doing or what is fashionable, or, you know, it didn't start because I was trying to fit in with a whole load of other people. It started from my abhorrence of violence being committed against animals, and that's never going to change. So I'm in a way not that bothered what other people are doing, but I am bothered about injustice against animals continuing for sure. But my focus is just still on how I can combat that, how what I can do about that. It's always been that, and it always will be that. Obviously, yes, it is much nicer and easier if other people are joining in, but they are. They absolutely are.
Well, yes, they are. And I guess these products make it as easy as possible for people to transition. And I personally want as many people transitioning as soon as possible. We need to do it now. Yeah, we just need to make it easy for people. But I think they understood, if they could bear to look and see what is happening to animals. And actually, I think some people find it easier once they have transitioned to then start thinking about the animals, don't they? So,
but the more nonsense the anti-vegan movement come out with, the more publicity the whole question and conversation gets, and the more stupid and corrupt they look anyway. So They are hoisting themselves by their own petard in a way. I'm not at all worried by any of this.
No, I think we have to be realistic and acknowledge that there will be a small proportion of people who call themselves vegan. We, with the three of us, might not sort of agree with that self-identification, but there might be people who are swayed by the sort of anti-vegan propaganda, for want of a better phrase, and then they do feel pressured by places like GB News saying, oh, veganism's a bubble and it's bursting, it's going out of fashion. There will be a small proportion of people who are put off by that. And like I say, we could sit here and say, well, you're not really vegan if that's going to affect you. But I think that it's realistic to say that that will happen. That said, there's a far, far, far greater proportion of us who are not going to be swayed by it. And I think that is the my kind of response and the thing that's going to reassure me. It's like, actually, there's hundreds of thousands of ethical vegans who are not put off by the fact that Oatly have discontinued an ice cream, are not put off by the fact that there's a GB News host saying, oh, it's just an eating disorder. Like, we're not going anywhere. And a lot of us went vegan before there were convenient products, before Beyond Meat even existed, but before any of these things. And we lived a vegan lifestyle and we were happy and we were healthy and we kept going and we had community, and it's fine. And of course, it's easier when there's more of us, and it's easier when there are products that you can pick up on a late night drive back across the country from Starbucks at 2 a.m. But do you know what? We're not going anywhere, regardless of kind of how difficult it is. And actually, there's not going to be these same headlines. In 5 years' time, there is not going to be a headline that says the vegan bubble has burst, because that was 2023's news, or early 2024's news. Like, it's not going to continue.
But even with all that, if veganism was just about not eating animals and animal products, but it's not. That's almost, to my mind, a fairly small part of it. So it's not reduced to that. It's not about what we buy or don't buy. It's about how we live our lives alongside animals. There's so much more to it than that. And even if the products that are available to people are not as fab as they might be, or I don't know, that's not going to change the fact that more and more people are aware of other things that they do in their day-to-day life that contribute to the exploitation of animals. And we have increasing means to know about them. There's far more being talked about on social media. We're better connected than we've ever been. We have access to information that we did not have. There are people going in undercover, getting behind industries and things that was not happening. It wasn't possible before. And it's increasing day by day. You know, in the mainstream, people know about things they didn't have the opportunity to know about. And that progress of increased awareness and information, it cannot go backwards. Once people know, they know. Once a word is out in the public domain and is bandied about and used, and people actually know what factory farming is or whatever, it's just, you can't stop it. It's great. It just it takes on its own momentum. And that's what we're living in now, is people realising that things like horse racing is not a good way to live alongside animals. All kinds of things that just weren't in people's consciousness, you know, a few decades ago. So, yeah, that's all part of it. It's not just about the food at all. We know that. We can get... Don't get siloed into that way of thinking, because that's what the press and the media are trying to narrow it down to. But there's way more to it than that. And there is good news cropping up in legislation that's coming out. I know, it's Scotland, yay! Wildlife Management Bill and all the rest of it. But, you know, that we wouldn't have even dreamt that was possible a few years ago.
I guess stay focused and calm, because we're on the right side and eventually we will prevail, won't we? So, you know, and like you say, Julie, you know, so many people exposing the lies and misinformation from these companies, which is
up the revolution.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Well, there wasn't this podcast a few years ago, was there, even?
We're not using this podcast as a barometer of the vegan movement. I'm not allowing that pedestaling to happen.
All I can say is that I think it's inevitable that veganism is going to grow. It's just inevitable. Yeah. Like you say, it's evolution, Julie. It really is. And also, in the not too distant future, I keep going on about this as my favourite.
I'm going to guess what you're going to say. You're going to mention cultured meat.
Yay!
Ding!
I am! And fermented, you know, which is technically plant-based, but I shan't be eating it myself. But, you know, the meat and dairy industry, they are going to be completely outcompeted because it's cruel, it's messy, it's inherently expensive. And so it just makes total sense. And also these massive companies, they must be seeing already the writing on the wall. And some of them already are investing in some of these other technologies. So there's going to come a point and they're going to start dropping dairy. They're going to start dropping meat because, you know, it's just diminishing returns. So even on that level, I think that their days are numbered.
All we need is some more politicians, party leaders, to be vegan, and the whole thing could change extremely quickly. These subsidies that are given to animal agriculture haven't been reassessed or looked at or examined in a very, very long time. They are traditional, and there are an awful lot of things that are not getting scrutinised that really need to be looked at. And it would just take somebody to be in power who has a mindset to scrutinise these things and decide what companies and what industries deserve public support and which ones are no longer viable or ethically sound. So, yeah, that's all we need. It just needs to get political.
Mm. Well, we saw with Eric Adams in New York, the massive impact. I mean, he's predominantly plant-based, isn't he? I don't think he's 100% plant-based. But within a year, there's been nearly 1 million plant-based meals served in New York hospitals since he's been in charge, because he just says, well, this is what needs to happen. I think I'm with you there. Right, let's bring the conversation to an end there. Cracking chat, everybody. Really enjoyed that one. Listeners, please tell us what you think. Do you get the heebie-jeebies when you start seeing Daily Mail reporting that the vegan bubble has burst, or are you reassured by, you know, Julie's words of inspiration that it's all going to be okay and we just need to not panic? You know how to get hold of us. It's enoughofthefalafel@gmail.com.
So thank you, everybody, for listening. We do really appreciate you joining us and listening in and sending us your comments as well. If you're new to the show, we have got other episodes. We have got other episodes of Vegan News. There's also another series of episodes called Vegan Talk, which are more in-depth discussions. And in January, we recorded a series of episodes called Going Vegan, where different people were interviewed about their transition into veganism. So please give all these a listen. They're really good value.
So on Thursday, there's going to be an episode of Vegan Talk featuring Ant, myself, Julie, and a little cameo from Carlos, where we'll be reviewing the film Pignorant.
Anyway, that's enough of the falafel for this episode. I've been Julie.
I've been Anthony.
And I've been Kate. And this has been episode 53 of Vegan Week.
The best mistake, which I don't know if anyone else picked up on was how Kate beautifully referred to the our protagonist or antagonist as Rick Berkman. His actual name is Rick Berman, but I thought that was particularly apt.
Yeah, it's right, Burke. Yeah. Rick Berkman. Yeah.
Indeed. Anyway, right, best of